It is time for sex and relationship therapy. Our sex and relationship therapist, Rachel Cook, is standing by, waiting to go. But listen to this. These days, we have the world at our fingertips, don't we? But are we actually enjoying our lives? Have a listen to this.
Artificial intimacy. It's distracted attention. I talk to you, even through the phone, exactly through the phone, and I say to you something really important, and you go, uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I know that you're actually multitasking, that you're doing something else while you're talking to me. But we have a host of other technologies, right, that are accompanying us, not just the phone, that are all having this notion of being able to predict for us where we should go, what I should listen to, what I should watch, who I should date, where I should go to eat. You know, it's assisted living, you know.
Right.
Each of these technologies that are supposed to help us become more connected are actually making us slightly socially more atrophied.
There we go. That was psychotherapist Esther Perel's explanation of artificial intimacy. But how does it affect our love lives? Well, let's ask Rachel, who's on the line. Hi, Rachel.
Hiya, Jenna. I'm raring to go on this one. I absolutely love Esther Perel's work, and she has loads of great stuff to say about this artificial intimacy.
It's interesting because it's feeding into a lot of conversations we're having about loneliness this week. And we had the psychotherapist Alison Keating talking about, you know, the stats that they've appointed a minister for loneliness in 2018 in the UK. And it's a huge issue and affects the way we live. It affects our health, our well-being. And it's a huge issue. And it's interesting because we're so connected now. And we think we're so connected, but we're not getting the right connection. So let's talk about artificial intimacy. What do you think of the whole idea of artificial intimacy?
Yeah, so there's a few different kind of layers to it, I think, because as you just pointed out there, most of us are sort of hyper connected in the sense that we have multiple streams of different kind of potential and actual connections with people and communities, groups, whatever it is, but that the quality of connection appears to not be working with our kind of biology, our evolution. So we're not getting the same kind of real sense of safety, empathy, belonging, you know, sense of kind of comfort and general connection with people through screens, through technology. And, you know, it doesn't mean that all technology is inherently wrong or bad for us, but that the quantity and the algorithms and the way a lot of this technology is designed means that it's become compulsive for a lot of people. It's very difficult to move away from it. And so we're kind of becoming increasingly lonely. And as Esther said in that clip, you know, our muscles of connection are becoming atrophied or sort of wasted away. And we're kind of just turning even more to screens to try and kind of comfort ourselves. So, yeah, it's a problem.
So, Rachel, are we talking about dating apps as artificial? Are we talking about like Tinder or, you know, even, or is it specifically dating apps we're counting as artificial intimacy, or could it be like Instagram and social media accounts?
Yeah, it can be everything. So really, artificial intimacy, as she refers to it, what she's talking about is where people supposedly are with each other, but are not actually really kind of mentally and emotionally present. So it's basically that we've come to accept this kind of very distracted attention as enough. Mm. And it's just not. So artificial intimacy is about these kind of disrupted connections that have become very normalized and socially acceptable, which can be anything. It's definitely not just dating apps. It's being on screens in any way, you know, which includes, you know, years ago we had, you know, television to a degree. But obviously now technology is becoming much more sort of interactive and intelligent, you know, artificial intelligence. So it's kind of simulating human relationships and human capacities. But it's still not, you know, even though it's getting very good at it, it's still not producing the same results in people as actual kind of face-to-face, proper, kind of undistracted, full, undivided attention contact, which we're just not getting as much because we're staring at our phones.
We are. How do you experience this in with clients you're working with in therapy, and what effects is it having on them?
Yeah, so a lot of it is about loneliness for sure. You
Yeah.
know, we know that, like, certainly after the pandemic, at least half of people from any of the kind of research that was done experienced serious kind of negative, you know, kind of effects from the loneliness, the social isolation and stress. And many of those people were turning, you know, I would say most people, certainly in, you know, the kind of global north or west, were turning to screens a lot of the time to try and alleviate that loneliness. And so, yeah, that's one of the things. The other thing, you know, I'm seeing a lot of kind of addiction around kind of you know, porn and dating apps. That's
Yeah.
another one that's big.
Wow.
And then people just really struggling with having any kind of tolerance for flaws and mistakes in other people as well. You know, on one hand, I think particularly during the pandemic with all of the social media and kind of insta therapy that was going around, in some ways there's a lot more kind of awareness and better boundaries that people have. But I think it's also driven people to, you know, having been so isolated, to being pretty bad at being in groups now and being tolerant of kind of different views and people with their flaws, because a lot of technology sort of promises, you know, in its kind of perfect curation of feeds and filtered images, you know, it's this promise of perfection that does not exist in the real world with humans involved. So there are some of the effects that I'm seeing, certainly in
Okay.
therapy, is this kind of, you know, real lack of capacity for tolerance in conflict in relationships, and people just being really frightened of any kind of vulnerability, with a real human, because, you know, often they can just turn to a screen to kind of comfort themselves and avoid.
Is artificial intimacy, is it worse than no intimacy? I'm sure for some people there just aren't many offline options.
Yeah, so this is the thing that, you know, it's a very good point, is that for lots of people, it could be because of their geographical location, it could be because of like physical disability, it could be for all sorts of reasons that, you know, certainly some intimacy is generally going to be better than none. However, I think most of us fool ourselves that, you know, doing certain things on screens is going to end up being as satisfying and fulfilling, or even more so than making the effort to do those things in person. And so this is what we're finding with dating apps. You know, most people are still using them, and most people will say that they absolutely hate them, find them really unrewarding, aren't getting, you know, having a decent time, feel incredibly burnt out and demoralized by them. And yet, because we're not used to meeting people in person anymore, and just kind of meeting people when you're out and about at the pub, or, you know, at the, I don't know, library, going for a dog walk, whatever it is, we've lost those skills of saying hi and swapping numbers and meeting up with people. So we're kind of fooling ourselves that we are getting that connection through you know, screens, social apps, social media apps, all of that.
Is it true that young people are having less sex than in the 80s and 90s? I mean, is that
Ooh.
true?
Yeah, so this is one that Esther Perel talks a bit
Yeah.
about herself. And, you know, it seems like there is less quantity of sex going on than there was in, you know, kind of the end of the last century, I guess. But that, you know, the quantity I don't think is particularly important, which is what she says as well. You know, we really need to be looking at the quality of sex, because if you're having really satisfying sex once a month and that works for you and your partner, then there's no issue, rather than having, you know, you could be having sex 5 times a week and be finding that, you know, very kind of, I don't know, empty or boring or, you know, unsatisfying in general. So, yeah, I think that some of this, you know, people will often talk about how dating apps and social media has kind of, you know, our connectivity to screens has lowered the amount of in-person kind of dates and sex that we're having. But that's not to say that it's necessarily all bad, because some of the quality may be higher. And yeah, I think there's kind of, yeah, there's things to say about both sides, about the pros and cons of kind of
Yeah.
meeting people and
Okay,
connectivity.
so how can people realistically improve their quality of attention in their relationships? I mean, is the only answer to leave all social media?
Yeah, so I definitely am seeing more and more people in my practice who are leaving social media completely, but I don't think that has to be the, you know, what everyone needs to do. You know, it's just that for a lot of people, like with many things, kind of getting yourself to the point where it's really not impacting you can feel like you need a lot of discipline and need to put a lot of time and energy and kind of be quite strict with yourself. So, you know, realistically, you don't have to go off social media altogether. But, you know, it probably does mean that you need to put kind of, yeah, boundaries and agreements in place. Like, you know, don't be looking at your phone when you're having meals together with your family. You know, being quite careful about how long before bed you put away, you know, your phone or your laptop, and take time to really wind down, because this stuff affects every part of our lives. It's not just, you know, aspects of our romantic relationships and sex. It's to do with your general kind of well-being, your energy levels, your how you're doing at work, how you're sleeping, how it impacts your, you know, diet, exercise, all sorts of things. So I would say really it's about putting boundaries in place, sitting down, take some time to journal about this. You could talk to your therapist, you could, you know, talk to your partner, family, friends about what sort of agreements you can make, because you can always just try something for a month. I would recommend trying something for a month, say, let's say, turning off screens by 10 p.m. or something, or earlier,
yeah,
and just see how it goes for a month. And if you find that it's, you know, really, really difficult and making your life drastically worse, then you can adjust it again. But just give it a go. Be curious about trying things out, because most people find they don't miss it anywhere near as much as they thought they would once they get past the first few days of the kind of withdrawal symptoms, and then they can start engaging more in their relationships and their life.
Somebody just texts in, Rachel, saying, how do you know if you're having good sex? Yeah.
How do you know if you're having good sex? Well, there's various ways you can tell that, I would say. I mean, how would you say you know if you're having good sex, Jen?
I would say if you're feeling fulfilled.
Yeah.
If, full stop.
Yeah. I mean, there you go. Now, obviously, that can mean lots of things, because some people will say it's about orgasms. Of course, it is for some people, but it doesn't have to be. Some people, it's about comfort. It's about stress relief.
Mm.
But I would say just kind of going like, what's happening in my sex life? Does it feel like it's, you know, there's not enough of it, there's too much of it, that it's, you know, not the right quality? I would say, you know, the way you know if you're having a good sex life is by asking yourself questions, getting curious. And reading up about sex, that's another way to kind of see whether you might give you more ideas for how to kind of gauge that for yourself. But there is no one definitive right or wrong way to
well
gauge
said.
That.
That's why you're the therapist. Rachel, thank you so much. I'll talk to you next week. Jen Zamparelli on RTE 2FM.